right, the Audible's on the air. Kimbo Camber, John Congemi with you. It's a Monday afternoon. John, we're hoping to be a little more pleasant situation today than it actually is, but tough game up there. It was, you know, and John, I think we touched on a little bit before we got in the air here. You look at that game, and it really was a game that this the frustration of that game is it was a winnable football game. I don't think even at 24-16, I don't think that score is indicative of kind of how out of hand the game got. But I just think early on there was opportunities. We talked a little bit about early couple series where he had a couple would-be sacks, you know, where Tyrod Taylor slipped out of the tackle, and every time he did, he buried you with a big third down completion for a first down and kept drives alive and went down and scored points. And I think, you know, once they scored their second touchdown to go up 21-6, it was pretty much all said and done at that point. Throw two interceptions to come out in the second half, and you were just trying to catch up as best you could in that game. And, boy, and John, we had talked about it before, Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy, and really those are the two guys that made the difference in the ball game.
It really seems like the Bills have the same script every time they go against the Dolphins.
Yep.
It's escapability with Tyrod Taylor.
Yep.
It's elusiveness in the backfield and in the secondary with Shady McCoy.
Yep.
And it's whoever's playing tight end, mostly it's been Charles Clay.
Yep.
But whoever, it's O'Leary, it's whoever it is, check the ball down to McCoy, let him make somebody miss, find the tight end in the passing game, and let Tyrod Taylor do his thing. And for the Buffalo Bills, really, it was really 30 minutes of football.
Yep.
Because in the second half, they didn't really do a whole lot
to
the Miami Dolphins. I thought the Dolphins played better on defense. They finally got home with a sack. They found more pressure in their defense. They were a little bit tighter coverage. And then on offense, they overcome two interceptions in the first two series of the second half, two punts after those turnovers.
Yep.
And then they find themselves in a game where they're an onside kick away. They get it. And they're one more turnover away from, you know, potentially tying the game up in a game that might not have been as close as the 24-16 score after four quarters. So you're right. That was a winnable game, and it's a frustrating thing for a Dolphin fan watching this game at home, and we're in the studio watching it. You're at the game watching it. It's just a play here, a play there.
Yep.
You know, T.J. McDonald comes up with that interception. If Jay Cutler throws it away and doesn't have an interception, you know, the momentum swings in that game. It just seems like the Dolphins, when they found themselves back in it, they would do a couple things to keep them out of the game.
Yeah, it was just a frustrating game, because I really felt going in that the Dolphins, you know, based on the way they had played the week before, the 2 weeks prior, that they were really on a roll, and I really thought that defense would step up and have an answer. You know, not so much for LeSean McCoy, because he's going to get his yards. But I thought they'd do better against Tyrod Taylor. Because you know what he's done. He's done it before in the past. You need to stay in your lanes, do those kind of things. And the other thing, John, is, you know, there's these, you know, these naked boots where you come out and the guy's standing. You know, there's really an easy way. If you're backside rush guy, all he needs to do is get
upfield.
You know, the rule for me when I was the outside rush guy was always be as deep as the deepest guy.
Right.
And then nothing comes back your way. Runs a naked boot, you're standing there, he's got to pull up. They try to run a reverse.
He's got to run to where the help is.
Yeah, so it's you know, it's just, you know, one of those things. And I don't know if that's in their scheme or what, but it's not that hard to fix. But it's been something that's kind of plagued this team for a while. So, yeah, it's just a tough situation. But, you know, and you say it, and it's a little consolation to the whole thing. But, you know, for again, the Dolphins, I mean, they played 60 minutes, like you said. You know, they're down. It looked like they were so far out of that game that they weren't going to get back.
Right.
They fought their way back in it. They get the onside kick. They're, you know, they're still in
they
the ball
game.
And they played till the end. And
right.
So, you know, you can't take away the effort that this football team has given virtually every game.
It's the execution that is lacking. If they were doing as well executing as the effort that they would give, they would be 8-6 or 9 wins or a 10-win team instead of a 6-win team. But, you know, when you look at the turnovers, you look at the fumbled snaps, you look at the botched fumbles in the backfield when Cutler loses the ball, and you take a look at 7 penalties for 60 yards, those things add up.
Yeah.
Good teams try to overcome those, and most of the time they do. average teams, teams that are struggling, teams that are underachieving, tend to lose those football games, and that's where Miami has been. They've beaten the better teams when they've executed. They've lost to the lesser teams or the equal to teams when they don't add up in mistakes and turnovers and penalties and interceptions and fumbles.
It's just frustrating. And I think when you look at, and we were all talking about this on the way back on the plane, you know, and you kind of start looking back at the woulda, shoulda, couldas. And you look at a Jets game early on up in the Meadowlands. You look at the game against Tampa, where you really and Oakland. Those are the three games that really jump out at me. And I would add this Buffalo game to that mix too.
As
a game,
same
was,
ammo.
Same was winnable. That this was a game that, you know, they won the game, but had you played just a little bit better, you know, they would have been a completely different thing. So, you know, I think therein lies the frustration with, I think, a lot of the fans, certainly with the players and you know, with us guys that are around this team, and you kind of, you know, you kind of watch them every week and see what they do. But we were talking about that the other night, and I said, but you know what? That's what losing teams do. They sit back at the end of the season, look at shoulda, coulda, woulda, instead of the other teams that did it and got it done, and we're getting ready for the playoffs.
And there's only about 8 or 16 of those teams that did it and done it and are going on.
Yep.
Everybody else is kind of scratching their head saying, well, if we'd have done this,
if
we would have
this one slip
shored
away.
This up, or the injuries wouldn't have hit at a certain part of the season.
Yep.
I think that's where the Miami Dolphins are. You go back 1 week and look at the execution against the New England Patriots, a very good football team, and you fast forward and you look at the inability to cash in when you need to, for, you know, settling for field goals instead of touchdowns, knowing that Tyrod Taylor, when they go to an empty set, he's running the football and nobody can corral him to the ground, and he's able to use his speed to the short side and get in. You know, staying away from the bonehead penalty or the bad decision in the passing game or the contain on defense. Yep. You know, there's a lot of things, a lot of little things that add up to losing football games. And when Miami loses games, you can go back and take a number of those points in each quarter. It just doesn't happen at one part of the game. I thought it happened in the beginning of the game when they didn't find a way to match a score with a score. And it happened in the middle of the game when they turned the football over. And it happened at the end when they try to get some good fortune going on the onside kick, and you give it right back on the next play.
The other thing that I think really, really put a kink into the game was was the running game. You know, Kenyon was come out and looked like, hey, he's going to have another big game. Then he had 50-some-odd yards in the first half, had a couple big runs, and then all of a sudden they started to sputter in the running game. Then it got – then
they next get those know, negative
gets,
plays.
It gets a negative – next thing you know, it's first and 14.
Right.
It's or second and 14, second and 13. Those and then you just can't get out of that hole. And so you get away from running Kenyon, which takes away a big part of what's made this offense click over
the
last couple of weeks.
He's had explosive plays. He's had two 31-yard runs and a 40-plus-yard run in the last 3 weeks. So, and he's been close to or almost over 100 yards in total yards in two of the 3 weeks easy. Yep. Last week he was just – or last yesterday he was just under. But or maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was over.
Close.
I think he was pretty close to being over. But Kenyon Drake's numbers have been great.
Yep.
But when you miss on first down and you go second and 14, it's tough to get him back into set of downs unless you get a first down.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's, you know, he's been such a Spartan. The other thing about having to go away from Kenyon Drake is when you go away from Kenyon Drake, your offense now becomes limited. You know, with Kenyon Drake getting yards, moving the chains, you know, you can do all the other stuff. I mean, that's, I think, why the play calling we've seen early in that football game yesterday in the previous 2 weeks was worked out so well because you had that running game. And they had to respect the running game. Linebackers had to play a little closer to the line of scrimmage. You know, the safeties had to be concerned with run support and all those types of things that come with that. And that kind of opened up Adam Gase and his ability to call some different plays down there. When you take that away from that offense and that play calling ability, it really, you're kind of like a one-armed man out there playing the game.
Yeah, I take that back. Kenyon was over 100 yards in total yards over the last 3 weeks. It's been 4 weeks since he hasn't reached that mark. But you're right. You become a little bit handicapped in where your play call list is. You go down and you feel like you want to open it up, but down and distance dictates that you can't.
Yep.
And you want to protect your defense. You want to be able to not keep them on a short field. So you don't want those turnovers or maybe some of those play calls that are in the wrong areas of the field. Yep. You don't want to do that unless you have to, unless you're down two scores, yep. unless you're in the fourth quarter and it really doesn't matter and you're going to call for four downs instead of three downs yep. and kicking it away.
You know, John, as, you know, watching that game and there's a couple things, and you kind of saw where that game was going. You started looking ahead a little bit, and the one thing you look for positives. You know, what's positive about what's gone on this season? And John, the thing to me that keeps jumping out to me are the young guys.
Right.
You know, the first year players we have, the Devon Gotchaws, the Vincent Taylors, the Tankersley in the
right.
back, Xavier Howard in his second year,
Harris.
Stepping up, Charles Harris and what he did, Jesse Davis, a young kid,
That's right.
getting in there playing well, and Kenyon Drake, you know, another second year guy that had the opportunity and really stepped up and showed you he can be a guy that can carry the load. So I think you look at some of those young guys and you got to feel good about last year's draft and the draft before. Jakeem Grant really in the last 2 weeks has become a more viable part of this
He's
offense.
He's showing you what he can potentially
yeah.
do on an offense.
And I tell you what, a couple times they thrown that little short ball yesterday.
I love it.
And made something out of it with his speed and quickness. And I think his confidence in the kicking game also has gotten better over the last couple weeks. And he's shown a little bit more of that spark we saw last year. So I think when you're looking for good things to latch on to in this football team, I think that certainly is part of what you look at. And if you can string together another draft like this draft or the draft the year before, you know, you start feeling pretty good about the young nucleus of this team that are just going to get better, and the veterans that are going to still be sticking around here that you can build on. But it's just, you know, it's tough with two games left to be already start talking about
I know it.
Next
I hate
year.
That
but,
talk,
but here we
is.
Are, you know. I mean,
yeah.
it is what it is.
I think, Bo, you mentioned a lot of great players that could be potentially stars, you know, for the Miami Dolphins that could lead this team for the next 4 or 5,
yep.
6 years. But ultimately it's going to come back to who's playing quarterback
yep.
for the Miami Dolphins. And I don't think the Buffalo Bills or the New York Jets or the Miami Dolphins have really figured that out
yep.
against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady
yep.
and the New England Patriots
yep.
because once one of those teams, and it might be Miami with Ryan Tannehill coming back
yep.
next year. It might be Miami, it might be Buffalo with somebody else other than Tyrod Taylor. It could be him. New York have their own problems
yep.
at quarterback. But whoever figures that out and does it in the next couple of seasons is going to have the upper hand in
yep.
the AFC East because Tom Brady's going to go away. They have no one to replace him. But until then, the road goes through New England.
Yep.
And all three of those teams are going to struggle no matter how good the ancillary talent is around
yep.
that position. If that position doesn't produce, you're going to find yourself struggling week in and week
yeah,
out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And when you look at it, you know, you look at it, I don't think ever before – quarterback has always been an important – piece to any football
right.
team from day one when they first started throwing the forward pass. That's when the quarterback became the focal point of every football
yeah.
team and really a big factor in whether you win or lose. But I don't think it's ever been as clear now that if you don't have that big time quarterback, if you don't have that guy that can put the team on his shoulders and win games for you and can come back late and win games for you and can throw all the balls and doesn't turn the ball over, then you're going to be in that mix of all the others that are going shoulda, coulda, woulda
right.
in those situations. So I'm with you. I'm kind of banking on Ryan Tannehill coming back last year, because I really thought this offense last year was perfect for Ryan
it's
Tannehill.
Good, yeah.
With his ability to run and did things, it was effective. You know, they were getting the long ball. They were doing a lot of different things. And Ryan's got that little conservative nature to himself that protects the football.
His value
yes.
on the football
yeah.
and being able to make good decisions.
Yep.
You know, everybody's going to throw interceptions. The best quarterbacks in the NFL do that. But it's the times where you make those decisions that gives your team confidence
yep.
or deflates your football team,
yep.
quite frankly. A lot of those things can be deflating for a defense to go out. They get a three and out, and all of a sudden you hear a roar, and you're on the road,
yep.
and you're back out on the football field.
Yep.
So, yeah, I do believe that position in this today's NFL is probably more vital than ever
than it's
in the
ever
league.
Been. Yeah, no doubt. And so you know, I think you look at Ryan coming back certainly, and I would not be shocked at all within the top four rounds if the Dolphins don't go out and grab a quarterback
yeah.
somewhere along the way
in the
draft.
You have to protect your franchise
yep.
with you've got a quarterback that you have faith in, but he's coming off of two now
yep.
injuries off the knee in different parts of the season, different years. So you have to be able to go out and get someone that you feel that's young enough that you can grow with and mature with that can play. That gets in the football game, he's going to be able to produce, and that's where the team is. And you add to that, Bo, all the things you said about those players that are now around Ryan Tannehill. I think it strengthens where the Miami Dolphins want to get to next season.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's go ahead and hit some of the questions here. First one, I'm going to just come out and say no. Jason Stavros, can we play fails the rest of the season? Why, let me ask you this. If you could answer back, why would you say that? What's the point of that? My guess, and I don't have a magic lamp to it or a crystal ball to look into, but I would be surprised if David Fales is on this football team next season. You know, first of all, he's got the issue of not being able to be on a practice squad, so that really puts a chink in the armor when you're thinking about that. You still got Dowdy, who's the young guy that, you know, but, and I don't, you know, you get that guy and you haven't done it for 2 or 3 years, and you know, the wick might be running a little low.
It's short
on that situation. Yeah. But I just don't see, I don't see the point in playing David Fales the rest of the season.
I don't think you're going to see that unless there was a nick to Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
And, you know, quite frankly, I'm not sure Matt Moore may be back active.
Yes.
Next week against week against Kansas City. So, you know, we have to wait that out till Wednesday or Thursday.
I just don't see that happening. And I don't see it happening, and I don't see the point as to why you would even consider that unless it was an injury situation and he absolutely had to come in and play the game. Hey, guys, what are your thoughts on Devontae Parker, his performance yesterday and on the season? You know, I don't like to do the grading kind of a thing, but I would kind of say ho-hum. I would kind of say, you know, we expected a lot more out of Devontae Parker, and I think at times we saw it. He made a catch yesterday where he went up and battled for the ball and took it out of the air, and, you know, one of those things, and you're going – and when you see that, you go –
Where is that all the time?
Where has that been all the time? Where is that every week where it doesn't happen? And
I think Devontae went through a crisis in confidence, in my opinion. Not only was he injured, which doesn't help a guy that depends on his flat-out speed and being able to come in and out of routes and doing those things, but I think his confidence was shattered a little bit this season.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Well,
because he showed all the talent in the world coming in OTAs and in training camp and in the preseason. You go, this is going to be our guy. This guy might be the one you consider giving all the money to.
Yep.
But I think that went away a little bit this year, a lot this year, because of the production.
Yep.
When you go back and you take a look, well, what have you done consistently? Because it has to be one of those things that, you know, almost you want to see that straight line or a little bit of bump up.
Yep.
You don't want to see those dives down. And I think we had too many of those.
Yeah, I kind of looked at Devontae from last year to the beginning of this year through OTAs, through training camp, all those things. And I said, you know, the year before, Devontae was kind of a hunched over shoulder guy. Then he became a chest out.
I'm
the man. I'm going to get the job done. And then somewhere in the season when he got hurt, his ankle and this and that, and then you kind of whoop, you know, kind of shoulders kind of closed down on him again. And he just kind of lost that whole thing. And, look, I still think the guy's got the ability. He certainly got the ability to be one of the greats in this league, but somehow he's got to get
checking in all the time.
At a higher level.
Check in all the time and try to gain more consistency.
Yep, yep. Brent Stratton from Facebook, how would you grade Kiko Alonso's play this year? I think, like a lot of guys, Kiko's been up and down.
Yeah.
I think there are times early in the season, I thought his coverage early in the season was on point.
He's flying around.
And then all of a sudden we went through a week, I think we went through 3 weeks, where he had three big tight ends that really made big plays in the passing game against him. Now, sometimes they were in zone, and he was the kind of guy in that zone. But that's, look, if you're in a zone, the guy's running through, you got to turn to man at that point. But I think Kiko, look, and I like Kiko's aggressiveness. I like everything about Kiko's game. I would say he's got to improve his coverage a little bit more. And you know, I think since he broke his thumb last year, he's less of a rapper.
He's a hitter.
He's less of a rapper, and he's a shoulder hitter. And that works sometimes, but a man's a big, strong back, and we saw it yesterday. Came in, put a good pop on it.
Bounced him right down the field, yeah.
So I think those are the things with Kiko. But, look, I like Kiko. I think the guys on the team
like
him.
Effort.
He's a motivation.
He gives you effort. And he's flying around.
Yeah.
He's 100 miles an
he's
hour.
He's a tough guy.
So I'm going to – I'll take – The shortcomings, I think, with Kiko.
Yes, I'm with you on that.
Because he's going to give you all he has.
Yeah, Yeah. I'd like to see him prove a little bit. But if you tell me, do I want Kiko on this team next year?
Yes.
My answer is yes, absolutely. Tommy Cloggs, hey, John, can you explain why the ball kept slipping out of Cutler's hands while he was throwing? But all season long, we hadn't seen that all season long.
No.
And look, it was cold.
In the cold.
It was cold out there, yeah.
There's a different element sometimes in the cold that where, you know, there's not that tacky.
Yeah, the ball gets
slippery. Sometimes when you say it's humid and it's slick, that's just because of sweat,
yeah.
But you kind of get used to that.
Yeah.
In the cold, it's a slick, but there's no tack to it. There's no grip.
Yeah.
And it looked like he tried to re-grip, and
yeah.
as he did, he lost yeah. control of the football.
It seems to me, John, is you know, when it's when you're out here in training camp or in the early where it's hot and it's your head sweaty, the ball gets wet, but it gets soft too.
Right.
That leather kind of gets a little bit soft. You get in the cold, and
it's
like a rock.
It is a rock.
Yeah.
It is. And when you slightly lose grip on the
yeah.
football, or you're trying to maneuver quickly
yeah.
and you're re-gripping,
yeah.
that's when the ball escapes to you.
Yeah.
And it looked like it just fell out of his hand.
The one time in the pocket. And I think the one, I don't know if he kind of hit his hip or whatever.
He might have had his guide hand and it
yeah,
hit.
Yeah, it just hit something.
And it
looked
went
like,
down
yeah, yeah.
on the ground.
But
yeah.
I think in that second half of that game, whether three or four times?
Snaps, shotgun yeah. snaps.
Yeah.
You know, you have to almost be a catcher at that point and disregard keeping your eyes
yeah.
downfield and really try to secure the football, but it did happen a number of times.
John, I know it's kind of become more of a recent thing in cold weather. Did you ever wear gloves to play?
I tried it, and
yeah.
it didn't.
On your left hand, absolutely.
I started
right.
wearing it on my left hand
yeah.
because it felt like it gave me a secure grip on
yeah,
the football,
yeah.
even when dealing
right.
with it, handing off, pitching it, but throwing it at the time we played or the time I was playing.
The gloves weren't very
they
good.
They weren't advanced enough. That they were still a little bit bigger.
They were basically
so
golf gloves or something.
So it
like
wasn't
that,
yeah. as good as it is now,
yeah.
but a lot of guys use it, and they like it.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen guys, you know, but, yeah, I was wondering because – because yesterday, to me, the thing that bothered me on the side was just my tips of my fingers were cold. And I kept watching Jay out there with no gloves on going,
right.
man, if I got gloves on and my fingers are cold,
right.
his tips of his fingers got to be just freezing out there.
And sometimes, you know, that happens
yeah.
when you haven't done it in a while. And it hasn't. I think the Dolphins have played two cold games this year, but that was the coldest game
yeah.
They had played all year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Far and away, it was the coldest game. All right, so let me see where we go. Ian Poglace, sorry if I butchered your name. Do you think we should draft a new quarterback, stick with Tannehill, or search in free agency? Well, we talked about that a little bit. I'm a Tannehill guy.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see Ryan come back. I hope, and I don't know where he is in his rehab, I hope he's ready to be ready for training camp. You know,
I don't really care if he's ready for
OTAs. I don't care for OTAs. He doesn't. He's not a guy that needs OTAs.
I almost want everybody to skip OTAs
yeah.
and let's just get to training camp.
Yeah, he's done. He understands this offense. He understands what we're going to try to do. Him is just about getting that knee back to where it needs to be. But I hope he's ready to go. You know, when you start training camp, because
right.
if not, you're not going to have him for beginning of the season. But I think if he's ready for training camp and he's 100%. I want to see another year of him.
Absolutely. I think, you know, what you're going to have to go through if you're the management and you're trying to figure out what do we need to do, you're going to try to draft a quarterback.
Yeah.
You're going to need to draft a young quarterback, but you're also going to have Ryan Tannehill and his agent yet come in and say, listen, we may need to do something
yeah.
with the contract in terms of making, you know, I don't know, $19
million,
yeah. $18 million, whatever it is. There might be something there, too,
yeah.
because there's a lot of guys in positions on this team that are making a lot of money that you may have to massage to get the cap where it needs
yeah.
to be and still reward those guys in terms of a bonus or something else down the line. But, you know, for me right now, this team needs Ryan Tannehill to come back and be the guy that we saw when he left.
Yeah.
You know, throwing the football,
yeah.
being able to run outside, being able to give the offense a dimension that it missed this year.
Yeah. And, you know, the good thing for him, he's been around. He's around every week. He travels with the team.
He looks great.
He throws the ball. And he did really good.
You watch him pregame,
yeah.
and you go, wow, is he injured?
I was watching him yesterday. I was just kind of watching him kind of walk through and say, you know, you can't – there's no limp, there's no nothing,
right.
you know, and I'm actually watching him walk by going, man, I wonder how that knee's doing.
You think you'd give me a quarter
yeah,
and a half today?
Exactly. Let me see. Brian Adams, Facebook, we need a much bigger offensive line to compete better.
I think Jesse Davis can be a
good
football
think Jesse,
player.
Look, I think
he's a big man.
I think Jesse, whether he's playing that guard position or playing right tackle, I think I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked if he's your starting right tackle next year going in. I think Juwan James, you know, had the injury, and I think that I'm not sure they're 100%, you know, sold on him.
What's
completely.
Another guy you have to make a decision
on what you're
going to
do,
right? As well.
Yep. So, but I think you're right. I think they found somebody in Jesse Davis, whether it's at the guard or tackle. I think his best position is probably out at that tackle spot. But I think they found somebody there. You know, Mike Pouncey's going to be a – we're going to be sitting there all offseason wondering about Mike Pouncey. How's Mike going to be? I think Tunsil, after a year at that left tackle position, I think
better.
He's going to be fine.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him be a little meaner. I'd like to see him be a little bit more nasty guy out there. I think he's got it in him, but I think he's trying to get his – get his feet on the ground.
Are we back to square one at guard?
I think we are. Yeah, John.
I
do.
So.
And look, I said it on a program a while back that look, if you know, you get that first round pick, give me a guard. You know, give me a guard that you can put him in there for the next 10 years. Don't have to worry about it. Man, it was an onslaught. Oh, you're an idiot. Why should they draft a guard? Why? Because we're still talking about
10 years or five years later.
It's been a half a dozen years at least. We've been talking about how do you shore up that guard position. And every year I go, you know what? You go in the first round and you draft some big stud.
That's right.
One of those big guys from Nebraska or Wisconsin or somewhere
give
up there, Iowa or somewhere.
Yes.
Plug him in there and don't worry about it. And then for another 10 years. That's the way you do it. Or you can go out and you can kind of dig through the scrap heaps and try to stick guys in there, and you're in the same boat you're in. I know it's not good for the draft party.
It's not sexy. It's not sexy for us because we have to talk about it. But you're right, Bo. You got to think that, you know, Jermon Bushrod, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to come back next year.
Yep.
Ted Larson, you know, there's going to be some questions of him coming back. You've got Asiata that had a redshirt year this year. Is he going to be able to challenge for a position? So there's a lot of moving parts at the guard position.
Yep.
And maybe it is. Maybe you keep Jesse Davis inside and you find a right tackle. Yep. I don't know. However the pieces fall in the draft, I think that'll dictate
Even if you put Jesse Davis at guard, and let's say you bring Juwan James back, put him at right tackle, you still got another guard position
that still
needs to be resolved. So look, my kind of pecking order draft wise is, and you can do them one or two. I don't care. It would be guard and tight end, or tight end and guard. Those are the two spots to me that I think you need to address early in the draft and get some guys that can come in and line up and play.
Yes, I totally agree. I think those are two positions on this football team that you have to find bodies that are going to come in and contribute in 2018 because they were less than stellar in 2017.
Yep. Next on Periscope, Man Called Jane. I thought Leon was Man Called Jane.
That's one of his aliases.
Okay.
Yeah.
When he goes on the road. He's
Buffalo, he might have been.
He's like a chameleon
on
the road.
Might have been under Leon. That name. That's
so
right.
So, Leon, I see Leon in the hotel. I'm checking in the hotel. And I see Leon, and he's frantic. He's looking around. He's looking for something. And I go, Leon, what you looking for? He goes, I heard they got a room where they got free alcohol in here.
Is Leon one of those Chardonnay sippers with the finger
no,
up?
No. I think he's a beer guy. I think he's a beer guy. And then he drinks probably rot gut tequila or something like that. Because he gets kind of sloppy late in the night, you know.
I've heard the rumors,
Stumbling around. Yeah. And I think he got his head closed in an elevator one time we were on a trip. I don't know. Anyway, Man Called Jane. You think Gase should delegate play calling next year and focus on being a head coach? He's not going to.
No.
That's not going to happen. That's his deal.
It's his baby.
But look, I
don't think that's the problem.
No,
with this
no.
team. If you're going down, you give me a list of 10 problems. That's 10.
Because I think I saw someone make a comment where they were talking about, you know, the goal line situation, and he's looking at his play.
I don't care. I don't care about that either. Anyway.
You know, but here's what I would say: don't look at that and say he's not a complete head coach.
Right.
Because Sunday night through Sunday morning, he's a head coach.
Right.
He's managing all the details. He's managing all the things that he wants. He's, you know, he's working with his coaches and telling them the way he wants to see this. So he's doing all that stuff all week long. But on game days, he's a play caller, and that's what his deal is.
And for people to tell me, because my friends, you know, why is Gase on the bench trying to figure out something when the defense is out there? Do you think the defense is going to look over and get inspiration from seeing Adam Gase go like this to the boys from the sidelines on third and goal? He's trying to figure out if they do score –
what do we need to do
on the other side to get it back. Yeah, so I can tell you I'm good with him.
The 10 years I played under Don Shula, Bill Arnsberger, for 8 of those years, Bill Arnsberger was our defensive coordinator.
Right.
And you know what? I never looked at Don Shula
when, you were when on
I
was on the field.
And I never expected anything
right.
from Don Shula when we were on the field, because that defensive coordinator, he was God.
And
he was our guy. He was the guy that dictated everything you did, good, bad, or indifferent. He was the guy. And that's just the way it goes. And, you know, and look, there were plenty of times we were on the field where Coach Shula was sitting there with Danny or Don Strzok or Bob Greasy or whoever, figuring out what they need to do and making plans. So I don't think that's an issue at all. Sean M. Ritwidge from Facebook, what's the real issue here, the protection for our quarterback or the quarterback? Well, I think they kind of go hand in hand. I think you probably 6-1, half dozen the other. Your quarterback could play better. Your offensive line could give him more protection. Probably plays better when he's got more protection. But, look, I don't think protection was a big issue yesterday. I thought, you know the balls that were left on the ground weren't because he was being hit.
Right.
It was just mishandling the ball. So, and I think over the last 3 games, I think with that line the way it was, I think they played.
It gave him a shot.
Yeah.
It gave
him
a chance to be more consistent. It just didn't happen yesterday in Buffalo for one reason or another. The timing was off. There was a guy in your face one play. I granted that, but a couple of decisions could have been better. Yep. Your throwaways would have been better than the turnovers. Yep.
Periscope will end up with this at Mills Gary 80. Bo, how discouraged would you have been missing those sacks? Like the it would drive. I tell you what, it's not only missing the sacks, and I asked Cam Wake about this after the game. It's not only missing the sack, which is bad enough, you know, from a personal standpoint, because you feel like you're letting people down, but when you miss the sack and the guy is stumbling, but somehow he gets up and
finds the guy,
and you got 3rd and 13,
they get 14,
and he gets 14 yards. That's what really is a backbreaker for
you. It's discouraging because not only did it happen once, it happened twice, three times, and it's big plays on third down where you're off the field.
Yep.
You're giving the ball back to your offense, and on those drives, they found ways to get points, and that's where it really hurts.
That's what really, So yeah, and I was sitting there and I watched Cam the first couple times. It happened to Cam the first couple times, and I thought, man, this guy must just be livid right now because, I mean, look, both times. Look, I give you this too. They've got to figure out what they're going to do with these quarterbacks. You know, the one sack I think it was Charles Harris, where he was down. I mean, he was in the grass.
Yeah.
He wasn't going anywhere. Slings the ball out there, and it becomes an incomplete pass.
Right.
Which, to me, is total bullshit.
And he was out of the tackle box. At first, I thought it was grounding.
Yeah.
But he was out of the tackle box.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's discouraging for everybody. But, hey, look, you know what? It is what it is. All right. Hey, look, that's going to do it for today. John Kajemi, Kimbo Camper. We'll be back Wednesday. And then Friday, we'll be back for a little bit of an early show on Friday, but we'll keep you updated on that, and I'll let you know exactly when we're going to be on when we're going to be on Friday, Wednesday on our show. Friday, we'll know all, whatever. You know what I'm saying. On Wednesday, I'll tell you when we're going to be on Friday.
You heard him.
I would tell you
why
when
is
we're
Leon
be,
put that
I would
bad script in.
Tell you
to
when
read.
We're going to be on Wednesday right now, because it's Monday, but I don't know. But it's going to be probably, I'm guessing, 3:30 or 4, somewhere around there.
Soothsayer.
All right, whatever Leon says. All depends if he can find that the hospitality room with all the booze in it. You know, then it'll dictate where we're going to be.
And Friday, it'll
speaking
be Friday.
Speaking of booze, probably one of the best parts of the trip. Get there. We're waiting to go out to dinner. We go up to the hotel bar. We're sitting there. And I've been looking for this friend of mine told me about this whiskey called Pappy Van Winkle.
Oh, yeah. Did you find it?
We're sitting in the Embassy Suites in Buffalo.
I
was at the Baccarat Bar in New York City, which is an amazing high-end. And I said, hey, you guys have – oh, geez, we can't get that. We're at the Embassy Suites in Buffalo. Danny and I are talking about Pappy Van Winkle, and the bartender goes, oh, we have that. What? He goes, yeah, we got two bottles right up here.
Did you get them both?
No. We each had a little shot of it,
right?
I mean, you didn't sip it.
How was it? Nice?
It was very good.
Yeah.
$100 a shot. It was on Danny's cars.
I was just going to ask. Bo, that
That's going to do
steep.
It for the Audible. We'll see you on Wednesday.
I need some Pappy.